Okay, let's unpack this. So, normally when you think about buying an apartment, you know, you're probably just checking out the view or like the counter space,
Yeah.
maybe the commute.
Right, you're looking at the actual physical space, but just to clarify the jargon right up front, a sectional title basically means you own the inside of your unit, but you share ownership of the outside. So, like the roof, the hallways, the land itself.
So you aren't just buying four walls.
No, not at all. You are instantly fused into this highly structured legal entity, whether you actually like your new neighbors or not.
Yeah, and the second the ink dries on that deed, this mini government is born. Because under the Act, a body corporate automatically springs into existence the literal exact moment someone, anyone other than the developer, becomes an owner.
Exactly. And suddenly, this entity has what the law calls perpetual succession, which, I mean, basically means it's an immortal corporation.
An immortal HOA.
Yeah,
Wait.
it outlives its human members. It can sue and be sued. It functions like an automatic HOA marriage between that very first buyer and the developer.
But developers usually just want to like build the thing, take their profit, and leave. What does this all mean for the developer who built the place? How does the law stop them from just abandoning this newborn entity before it can stand on its own two feet?
Well, what's fascinating here is that the developer is legally locked into this marriage until they have sold off every single share of the common
I don't.
property.
Wow, so they're trapped too.
They really are. And the law puts them on a very tight schedule to hand over the reins. So within 60 days of that first sale, the developer is mandated to call a meeting.
Okay, just 60 days.
Yep. They have to hand over the sectional plan, prove they've paid all the local rates up to that date, and surrender all the scheme's revenues.
Which, I mean, makes total sense when you think about the power dynamics. Because without that strict 60-day deadline, they could just hold on to the controls.
Oh, completely. Without that deadline, a developer could theoretically just use the new owner's HOA fees as a slush fund to finish building the rest of the complex.
Right, so they literally have to open the books and empty their pockets of the scheme's cash.
Exactly. The clock is definitely ticking, and those funds have to be strictly organized too. The act forces the body corporate to keep two distinct pots of money.
Okay, two pots.
Right. So first, there's an administrative fund for daily operations. Things like water, local taxes, building insurance. And then second, there's a reserve fund, which is strictly held for future maintenance and repairs.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because you have everyday people, I mean, the elected trustees, managing these massive funds.
Right, just your average neighbors.
So let's say a trustee decides to hire their cousin's extremely expensive landscaping company just to like do them a favor. What if they do that? If they have total control over the bank accounts, it seems like they could just drain the funds and get a slap on the wrist.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the law is completely unforgiving to prevent exactly that scenario.
Really? How unforgiving.
Very. The act explicitly states that every single trustee stands in a fiduciary relationship to the body corporate. They must act in absolute good faith.
Meaning, if you're a trustee and you sign off on your cousin's inflated landscaping bill, the law actually pierces your legal protection.
Yes, exactly.
The body corporate can literally sue you for your personal savings to recover that money.
Yep, the trustee is personally liable for any economic benefit they wrongfully receive, whether that's direct or indirect, or really any financial loss the community suffers due to that self-serving choice. They pay for it out of their own pocket.
Wow, that makes the legal reality quite terrifying for anyone volunteering to be on a board.
It definitely raises the stakes.
But wait, even with the threat of personal ruin, leadership can still fail, right? I mean, if the trustees just stop paying the water bill or totally mismanage the reserve fund, the owners can't always mobilize fast enough to vote them out before the building goes bankrupt.
Right.
There has to be a legal override.
And there is. That override involves some pretty drastic legal intervention. If a court finds evidence of serious financial or administrative mismanagement, a magistrate can appoint an independent administrator.
So it's less like a strict substitute teacher coming into a chaotic classroom to restore order, and more like a full corporate receivership.
That's a great way to put it. The magistrate basically declares the HOA legally incompetent, rips the steering wheel out of the trustee's hands, and the administrator takes total financial control to stop the ship from sinking.
Wow, total loss of control.
Right, it's the ultimate safety net for financial ruin. But what if a literal physical disaster strikes and the building is practically destroyed? The law offers another drastic mechanism for that. The owners can actually take a unanimous vote not to rebuild it at all.
I'm guessing that happens when the insurance payouts fall drastically short of construction costs. Or maybe the empty land itself is suddenly worth more to developers than the cost of rebuilding the original structure.
Spot on. But this raises an important question. How does a legal framework balance your individual right to property with the collective survival of the group when the very walls you share are reduced to rubble?
Right, because the building is officially deemed destroyed and the body corporate's obligations radically shift.
Which fundamentally changes how you have to look at real estate.
Yeah, what does this all mean for you listening to this? Buying a condo isn't just securing an asset for yourself. You are legally binding your financial future to the administrative choices and potential failures of the people next door.
Exactly. You're sharing the roof, the pipes, and the legal liabilities. Your neighbor's choices directly impact the survival of your asset.
Which leaves you with something to ponder long after you sign a deed.
Oh, for sure.
If a disaster strikes and a building is legally deemed destroyed and the owners pass that unanimous resolution not to rebuild, what happens to the social fabric of that community?
That is the big question.
And more importantly, what happens to that single empty dirt patch they all still technically share? It's no longer a building, but that inescapable mini-government we talked about at the start. It might just still be standing.